Today I want to talk about something the Lord has been teaching me lately. I would say a couple of months now. Actually, if I'm truthful, it's been a long time, but I've been listening for the last couple of months. And I just want to share some things that I've been meditating on, and I hope that we can gain what the Lord wants us to gain from these passages. But I want to start off with a simple question. How many of us love to watch movies? Raise your hand. Okay, that's most of us, yeah. Movies are fun, they're entertaining, right? And we know that when we go watch a movie, whether that's in the movie theater or at home, we know that it's for entertainment purposes. We know that things in the movie that we're gonna watch are probably not real, especially with today's modern technology of CG, and pretty much everything's computer graphics nowadays, right? But we know that going into the movie. We're not sitting there going, criticizing everything about it because that's unrealistic or whatnot. We know, hey, we're going to go, we're going to enjoy it, we're going to have fun and rave about it so that others can go and watch the movie as well. So let me paint a typical Hollywood movie scene. And I want, by the raise of hands, I want to see if you've ever seen this particular scene in a movie, any movie. Okay, here we go. So raise your hand if you've seen this in a movie. A cigarette butt tumbles off the hand in slow motion. It lands on a pool of gasoline and creates an instant fireball, followed by an explosion. Have you ever seen that in a movie? Raise your hand. I think we all have, right? And it's been in countless movies. How would you feel if I told you that's actually make-believe? That can't even happen. I know I was floored by it too, and I was on YouTube, and just YouTube it. Not right now. Later on when you get home, YouTube it. Just type cigarette butt lands on gasoline or something like that. And you'll see countless people doing that very thing, and it does not light up. In other words, it's make-believe. It's just for graphics. It's just for that wow factor. Now, of course, if you light up a lighter right to the pool of gasoline, then it will light up. But a cigarette butt won't do that. But you know what? There's countless scenes like this in movies, right? There's always an open parking space in front of the building the actor is going to. Have you ever noticed that in movies? Whether it's a shopping mall or some kind of building. I go to the shopping mall, man, it takes me forever to find a parking space. Man, I go to RCC or UCR in the fall, man, it's hard to find a parking space. You're in there 15, 20, sometimes half an hour. This happened to me before. How about this one? The Hollywood sign could be seen from any building window in LA. Or the Eiffel Tower from any building window in Paris. That's not true, right? Anyone can land a 747 Boeing airplane with the help of the control center. Seen that in a movie? Car explosions happen almost every single time there's a police chase. Now, Southern California is famous for police chases, right? And I've yet to see a car explode. Men in iron suits can fly. Men in red capes can be bulletproof. The handgun that holds 10 or 15 rounds can go on for 100 rounds before it gets reloaded, right? We see this in movies all the time, and we look at that and go, only in the movies, right? Have you ever gone to a movie where you go with a friend, maybe family member, and you're there just to be entertained? You know that scene, a flying man in iron suits, just it's all make-believe, but hey, you don't care about that. And your buddy's like, hey, in real life, that's just not possible, you know? And they give you the physics about it and how it's impossible. You know, do you have any of those friends? I've had those. I'm like, dude, just let me watch the movie, man. Oh, Chris is one of those? So you'd be the one, it's impossible for that cigarette butt to really light up. Because see, the air and the oxygen, you're one of those guys? Okay, all right. But, so we all have those friends, and sometimes, hey, I know it's fake, I just want to be entertained. It's interesting, though, that sometimes we read biblical accounts, and we kind of get an impression of, like, how's that even possible? Only in the Bible. You see, I think of many accounts. One in particular is from Luke chapter 1. We won't turn there, but Luke chapter 1, we read about the birth of Jesus Christ being foretold. We see in this scene, this biblical scene, Mary, there's an angel that appears to Mary, and the angel tells Mary that she's going to give birth to a child. And Mary's kind of like, I've seen that only in the movies, but not in real life. She says, how can this be? For I am a virgin. Remember that scene in the Bible? Only in the movies. And the angel replies to her and gives us this long, long reply. But in the end of that reply, he basically tells Mary, Mary, with God all things are possible, and you're going to see. And of course, we know the story, right? She was pregnant. She gave birth to Jesus Christ, born of a virgin. That's a miracle, only in the Bible. See, the difference there is that's not make-believe, that's real. God is a God of miracles. God is a God of impossibilities. Why? Well, because, God is the God that created everything. And putting the miracle of a virgin with child, that's nothing. When you consider all that he has done, right? Only in the gospel. Only with God. Only with Jesus do we see these things that are not make-believe, but are true and that are biblical. And so today I want us to read an account that reminds me very much about this in Luke 15. Let's turn our Bibles there. If you're visiting with us and don't happen to have a Bible, there should be some Bibles in the seats underneath you or in front of you. And we'll look together in Luke 15. By the way, for per presenter, I am going to be reading out of the New American Standard Bible. So Luke 15. And so I hope that opens up our mind to what we're about to read here in Luke 15, and allow the Lord to speak to us where we are at in our faith and our walk with him. In Luke 15, we read a few parables. In fact, I'm going to read them all and comment some of the observations that I found here that I've reflected on and that pertain to me at this point in my life. Beginning with the first parable, the parable of the lost sheep, then the lost coin, and of course the prodigal son. I'll start there in verse 1 of Luke 15. It says, now all the tax collectors and the sinners were coming near to him to listen to him. Both the Pharisees and the scribes began to grumble, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. So he told them this parable, saying, what man among you, if he has 100 sheep and has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open pasture, go after the one which is lost until he finds it? When he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost. I tell you that in the same way, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. Or what woman, if she has 10 silver coins and loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and search carefully until she finds it? When she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the coin which I had lost. In the same way, I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. And he said, a man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate that falls to me. So he divided his wealth between them. And not many days later, the younger son gathered everything together and went on a journey into a distant country. And there he squandered his estate with loose living. Now, when he had spent everything, a severe famine occurred in that country, and he began to be impoverished. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country. and he sent him into his field to feed swine. And he would have, and he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods of the swine were eating, and no one was giving anything to him. But when he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread? But I am dying here with hunger. I will get up and go to my father and will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men.' So he got up and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion for him and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found.' And they began to celebrate." Beautiful, beautiful stories, beautiful parables that Jesus is sharing with the crowd here. What we're seeing here in Luke 15, in particular with the first parable there, the parable of the lost sheep, is he's setting this up to make it a teaching moment for the crowds that were listening. In fact, we see there in the opening verse, verses 1 and 2, that tax collectors and other sinners, came to Jesus. They were coming to him. That's not new. You read the Gospels, Jesus was always surrounded by crowds. They were always looking for him, and vice versa. We see many times where Jesus is looking for them. Here in particular, the Bible tells us they were coming to hear him, to listen to him, and there they are, not just the crowds, not just the sinners, not just the tax collectors or prostitutes or anyone else, but there is the religious elite. There's the religious leaders right there in their midst. And they're not going to Jesus to hear him, although they may be. I think a Nicodemus probably was. Instead, they're over there to criticize. They're protesting, if you will. I think we're very familiar in our society about protests, right? It seems like every day there's a protest to something. They're protesting Jesus, and it says here that they were grumbling. They were grumbling, saying to themselves, "This man receives sinners, and he eats with them too?" It's amazing the attitude that the religious leaders had about Jesus and about what he was teaching. They hated, the Pharisees hated the fact that he was doing this, that people were coming to him, rather than people coming to them, the religious leaders. It's interesting, though, that the religious leaders hated the sinners. It was no wonder they wouldn't go to them. See, the Pharisees, the scribes, obviously we know they're very hypocritical. We know that from the gospel accounts. We know they're very legalistic. They look down on tax collectors. They look down on other sinners. I don't know about you, but when people look down on you, that's not the person you want to hang out with, is it? And so they're over here going like, why do they go to him but not to us? I don't get that. Well, obviously, their hearts are not where Jesus' heart is. Jesus was all about being with sinners. Jesus was all about eating with sinners, right? The Pharisees hated the fact that they broke moral laws, that the sinners hated Jewish customs. They hated those things, and so that's how they treated them. And so in response to that grumbling, that hatred, this is the parables that Jesus shares with the crowd. And I think specifically he shared it more for the Pharisees and for the scribes than he did for the sinners and the tax collectors. The first parable there about the lost sheep. A shepherd has 100 sheep. He loses one. Leaves the 99 behind to go after the one that is lost, the Bible says. Now, I'm going to be honest with you here. I've read this account many times. And almost every time I read it, I think to myself, that just seems foolish to me. You know, And I'm gonna be honest with you, I'm not a shepherd. I've never owned a sheep. I think most of us here would never have. So maybe if I was a shepherd, maybe I'd do the same thing. I don't know. But from the outside, separated from 21 centuries, I look at this and I go, I don't know that I would leave my 99 sheep behind to go after the one. Would you? And of course, not saying that I'm right. I'm just sharing what I think when I read this account. Because see, for me, I just would consider it a loss. You know what? Where's that one? I'm in count 99. I don't see the other. You know what? It's a loss. Forget it, you know. It'll get eaten by a wolf, a bear, a lion. But I got 90. I'm content to have the 99. I'm good with that. That's how I would think. Would you think that way? Well, so we read this account. We go, he left the 99 to go after the one. I see some theologians, might comment that it was customary for the shepherd to leave his flock behind with another shepherd, the hired hand, so to speak. And yeah, I guess I could do that. I guess if I owned 100 sheep and I lose one, I can tell my brother Gordo, who is here today, and go, hey, Gordo, can you take care of my sheep? I'll pay you. And, you know, I might feel pretty comfortable doing that, you know, but I might be gone days. I might be gone 48 hours, and he might have to go back to work somewhere else and might leave I don't know, right? I mean, there's a lot of things that go through my mind, but here we see in this parable, there's no hesitation. Leaves the 99 behind, whether it was with someone or by themselves, just to go after that one, that lost one. And I think about this in my own life. I reflect about this, and I go, man, only in the Gospels do we see this, right? Only in the Gospels. But the thing I have to remember when I read accounts like this, and I want to encourage us, when we read scriptural accounts like this, we have to think of it that this isn't a human story. In this account, it isn't a human story. This is a divine story. This isn't a human shepherd that Jesus is talking about. He's talking about a divine shepherd. And when you consider it in those terms, you realize, like, okay, this makes sense. God is not like me, and I am not like God. And I think that's Jesus' point here to the Pharisees, of course, to the entire crowd, but even more so directed towards them, the ones that were grumbling and complaining. His point is this: God is not like you, Pharisees, and you are not like him. And so here are some stories, here are some parables to teach you that truth, beginning with this one right here. You know, when I look at the Pharisees in this account, the scribes, a word comes to mind, a modern term, we use haters, right? They're haters. Anyone that opposes you or doesn't encourage you or is set against you in our society today, we call them, oh, they're haters, bunch of haters. And there's haters for everything, it seems like nowadays, right? Well, these were the haters of Jesus' day. They hated him. They hated everything about him. Even though he provided hope and comfort and peace, salvation, they hated Jesus Christ. You know, I think about the Christian, just Christianity, just all Christendom. And I see the hatred that exists in our society today. Do you see the hatred towards Christianity? I do. Maybe it's getting worse. At least that's what it seems like to me. But we're called bigots, you know, for not agreeing with certain lifestyles. We're called all kinds of things. And I get it. I get it, especially for those who call themselves Christians and they're out there with signs and repent and perish and you're going to die. I get it. I can see that. I don't think that's effective at all. I don't think Christians should be doing that. I don't think we should be protesting that. What we should be doing is doing what Jesus is doing here, and he's loving people. He's building friendships with people. He's saying, hey, let's have lunch together or dinner or breakfast and get to know people and build that relationship with people. I think that's the most effective way. That's all I see Jesus do in the Gospels. Haters. There were haters in his time, just like there are haters today in our world as well. But I want to make three observations that I see in this account, that I see in my own life that I'm lacking. And I hope that this would encourage you to see these things and maybe they can apply to you as well. The first thing is the passion of the shepherd. I see this immense amount of passion the shepherd has for his sheep. See, the Pharisees didn't have passion for the people at all. And I love that God's passion is best seen in Jesus Christ. It was that prophecy of the Messiah coming to earth. It was that angel telling Mary, you will be with child. And that miracle of her giving birth to this child. That purpose of Jesus Christ coming to this world to show us that he is the light of the world. To bring reconciliation to all mankind who has been separated from God. Right? I love that we see the passion of God throughout all scripture, but now in Jesus, he's put flesh and bones. Now in Jesus, we can see passion in physical sight. We can see his works, his deeds, his love put into action. Something we could identify with and go, oh, okay, so loving your neighbor is having a meal with him. Oh, I could do that. And so I love that we can see God's passion in Jesus Christ. I love this particular parable because it shows where I lack passion. See, I told you and I confessed to you that I wouldn't go after the lost one. I'd just be content with the 99. But if I had the passion of God, if I had the passion of Jesus Christ, I'd be passionate for all 100. I'd have the passion for the 99 and especially for the one that's not with me, for the one that's not with the rest of the 99. And I'd go after it. That's what we see in this particular account. And, you know, observing this text and reflecting in my own life, I realized, like, man, I don't have this heart. I don't have this heart of Christ. I don't have the passion that I see Jesus have for the found and the lost, particularly for the lost, since that's what this is about. How about you? How much passion do you have for the things that God values, for the things that God looks at, like this one, the lost, right? Man, I wish I had the passion of that I see displayed in this passage, but I don't, and I'm praying for that. I'm working through that in my own life, especially in the summer. I'm getting ready for the fall. Before you know it, RCC is going to be back in school. UCR is going to be back in school, and man, that's ground zero for a lot of lost souls. And I got to start preparing my heart and my mind for that mission. And so I've been reflecting on this stuff. But you know what? This account also reminds me of another account that we see later in Luke. In fact, let's turn there just a few pages over in Luke chapter 19. Because we get to see a little bit of a parallelism between these two particular accounts. In Luke 19 verses 1 through 10, we read about a rich, rich tax collector named Zacchaeus, who happens to be Jewish in the town of Jericho. Jesus is entering the town of Jericho, wasn't planning to stay in Jericho. He's just kind of traveling. He's a traveling minister, so to speak, and going towards Jericho, not planning to stay in Jericho. He just wants to walk through it and continue on his missionary journey. Verse 1 of Luke chapter 19 says, he entered Jericho, he referring to Jesus. He entered Jericho and was passing through. And there was a man called by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and he was rich. Zacchaeus was trying to see who Jesus was and was unable because of the crowd. For he was small in stature. And so he ran ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree in order to see him, for he was about to pass through that way. When Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for today I must stay at your house. And he hurried and came down and received him gladly. And when they saw it, they all began to grumble, saying, he has gone to be the guest of a man who is a sinner. Zacchaeus stopped and said to the Lord, behold, Lord, half of my possessions I will give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will give back four times as much. And then Jesus said to him, today, salvation has come to this house, because he too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. Wow, what a great account. And it's a parallel account to what we see back in Luke chapter 15. Here again, we see a Jewish tax collector, hated by the community, by the way. Everyone in town didn't like Zacchaeus, mainly because he was a traitor, a fellow Jew working for this oppressive Roman government. The taxation system that existed at that time was the local tax collector, in this case, a chief tax collector, he was the only one that knew how much Rome wanted from Jericho. No one else knew how much Rome wanted from Jericho at the end of the year. Only he did. And a lot of tax collectors knew the figures they were expecting at the end of the year, and they would charge that to the people and some. That's why they were rich. And no one can know, well, so how much does this town owe? Well, it's a lot, so keep giving. And it was a fraud for many of them. That's why they're hated. So here we have a Jewish man hated by his own townspeople because he's a traitor, and he's made wealth from their poverty. I think any of us would probably shun this guy too, right? Here we see this episode where Jesus, with all his fame, walking in through Jericho, and everyone's probably going, Jesus is in town, what? And they're out there crowding around, and Zacchaeus, hearing the news, goes, I've heard a lot about this Jesus, but I've never seen him. I'd like to go see him. So he goes out, being a short man. I don't know how short. Maybe shorter than Yesenia, maybe. I don't know. I mean, short. Not to pick on Yesenia. She's great height. Just, you know, for a man, maybe a little short for a man. But anyways, I don't know how short he was, but he was short. You would think if he was a respected and reputable man in town, people would make way for him. Like, oh, he's Zacchaeus. Did you want to see him here? I'll make way for you. Hey, guy, hey. Oh, hey. That's not what happened in this scene. In this biblical scene, what we see them going is, get out of here, Zacchaeus. You know, they are shunning him. And he's trying to, hey. You know, trying to. And so he finally said, you know what? These people don't respect me. I'm just going to run ahead of where Jesus is going. There's a tree. I'll see him from up there. And that's what we see in this scene. And Jesus makes his way through the city, out the city, and that's when he sees the sycamore tree. I think Jesus knew all along. He looks up and goes, even knows his name, Zacchaeus. Maybe he heard it from the crowd. Hey, Zacchaeus, get out of here. Zacchaeus, why don't you come down? I know you've been wanting to see me, and doesn't look like these people like you very much. So come on down. I'm going to go to your house today. I wasn't even planning on staying here. I was just going to pass through, but I'm going to go to your house today. The Bible tells us that he came down, and he received him gladly, right? He was like, man, I get rejected all the time, but okay, wow, hey. How do you think the people reacted to that? What's that? The haters. They became haters too. It says right there in that verse, they grumbled. They said to themselves, man, this he's going to be a guest at a sinner's home? And I love the fact that Jesus says, I can see these people hate you, so I'm going to stay at your place and shift their anger towards me. Man, only in the Gospels, right? I love that. How about you? What does that tell you about your Lord and Messiah? What does that tell you about the passion that God has for lost souls? I look at this man and I'm like, Lord, help me to be passionate for people. Help me. I'm not passionate, and I don't like that I'm not passionate. Maybe just a little bit, but I want to have this passion. This is the kind of passion I want for lost souls. The same kind of passion I see in my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. In other words, what I see in this account is Jesus going after someone who was an outcast. And for me, I take this challenge, and I want to encourage you with this challenge that look at our society, look at our world. Just look at the social circles that you belong to, the people that God has placed in your own life. Just look at those people. Are any of them outcast? Are any of them shunned? Do they have a lot of friends? Do Do they have deep relationships with people, family or friends and neighbors? Or are you the only one? I mean, we have to look at where people are at and be observant like Jesus was towards Zacchaeus and say, how can I help this person? And if we have the passion that we see in Jesus Christ, we would be doing that.